Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to Tribe Supper, your go-to Middlesbrough FC podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Musgrove, joined as usual by Craig Johns and Dom Shaw. We're going to look back on the transfer window for Middlesbrough. Wasn't the busiest of deadline days, but overall the month, quite a few incomings. And that's where we'll start, Craig, first off, before we look at who did indeed leave on transfer deadline day. Just sum up the month, in your opinion, good, bad, indifferent for Middlesbrough?
I think it was a good month, personally. I think, Chris Wilder started the January transfer window and he had one goal, and that was to end the month with a stronger squad, a more balanced squad, and a squad with better options. And he did make clear that he wanted to try and do that business as early as possible. I can't imagine there's been many windows in Middlesbrough's history where by January 14th, they already had certainly the priority business done. They had all four incoming signings done by January 14th. And ultimately, that's exactly what Chris Wilder did. He strengthened his options. Two good centre-forwards coming in on loan to add to the other two strikers that they already have at the club. And a fifth, if you include young Josh Coburn, who's pushing there as well, giving him good options at the top end of the pitch. And then, of course, a bit of added balance in the centre of midfield by adding Riley McGree, a left-footed central midfielder. I was spoken before about how Wilder likes, you know, that kind of balance of a right-footer and a left-footer. And then one of the kind of project signings, the long-term vision at the club in Caelan Boyd-Munce, hopefully an exciting future for him. So I think, yeah, ultimately, Wilder got what he asked for in January, and that was a bit of balance, extra options. And they got it done early, which, you know, that's already paid off. January has been, you know, at times quite a tricky month for Middlesbrough. Already we've seen January's early business pay off because the options from the bench with the strikers paid off against Reading, 1-0 down, threw all the strikers on, win 2-1. Coventry, Connolly having a tough afternoon, not really getting into the game. 0-0, Wilder makes the change. 2 minutes later, Balogun's providing the assist for what was ultimately the winning goal. So, 6 points there already in January, which you can credit to the January business, in my opinion.
100%. Dom, would you say they've done enough to really make promotion to the Premier League a possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Bournemouth had a binding window, didn't they? If they don't make the top two now, you've got to ask questions of Scott Parker, because that squad and the business they've done late in the window is quite staggering, really. Other than that, I think you could make a really good case for Borough having the best window of those, you know, in and around the in the picture for the top six. You've got really probably everything. I think you got to the point where you were getting to the final stage of the window, and, you know, we were kind of discussing last week as what Chris Wilder might want, because there's no obvious spots. Yeah, centre-half. I know Kieran Clarke was mentioned. You know, you'll know better than me, Moz. I can't say I'll lose any sleep over not getting him. You wonder there again, is that's just cover, because realistically, who's he going to come in for at the back? But Dale Fry's not going to be dropped. Dyke Steele's getting better by the week. And Paddy McNair, again, is one of those who's a nailed-on starter. You wonder whether there's an element of bringing in a centre-half to almost add an extra layer of cover for the Johnny Howson position that Craig mentioned, in that if Howson gets injured, you can then step McNair forward into that midfield role if needed. The only other thing was right wing-back. But again, touch wood, that's not going to be needed, because Jones kind of continues in the form that he has been. And obviously, you got a couple of players throughout the door as well. I know they wanted a permanent exit for Uche Piezu, but I was glad he got his move for Uche's sake, so he's playing regularly. And Marcus Brown, again, you know, I wish him well at Oxford. Obviously, it's been a cruel last 12 months for him, but he's gone to a place where he knows well. He's played probably his best football, a manager who knows him well. So I really hope Brown kicks on there. But yeah, as Craig touched on at the start, you know, it was a good window a week before the end of the window, unless, you know, something drastic happened and you lost Dale Fry or Marcus Tavernier or both. It was never going to happen. So, you know, credit to Borough for going into the deadline day. You know, if we get something, excellent, but if not, it doesn't really matter.
No, it seemed to be a very good window, and a lot of people in the comments agree and are very happy. We're just talking there about doing enough to make promotion a real possibility. We have Nicholas Johansson here asking, can we make the top two? So I think the points gap is, what, about 9 points or so? We know how good Fulham are. But Craig, with the additions and the January business, do you think the top two is a realistic possibility?
I think it's certainly there. As you see, it's an 8-point gap. Plenty of games, plenty of points still to play for. It's you know, there for the taking. But you know, as Dom said, there are some good teams there. Blackburn currently have that spot. And, of course, we all saw down at Ewood Park, you know, that they are a decent side. They are a very good side. And as Dom mentioned, you know, that deadline day business from Bournemouth, you know, the quality they've brought in, and Freddie Woodman in goal, Todd Cantwell in their team now, with Dembele from Peterborough, and Kiefer Moore as well from Cardiff, a one-time Borough target. I mean, there's some serious deadline day moves from Bournemouth there. You know, flexing the financial muscle, if you like, with those parachute payments still coming in for them. They are going to be, I would imagine, you know, the team to beat now, if you like, for that second spot.
It's going to be interesting. Sorry to put in there.
My instinct tells me that top two is too much to ask. Now, there's always a team, isn't there? And, you know, you put three wins together on the trot, and it looks very different. But my instinct just tells me it's maybe a little bit too much to ask, given that, you know, Fulham have, you know, surely going to go up. Although, you know, you draw against Blackpool's one of those games that always just brings you back down to earth, doesn't it? As the Championship does. And as Craig says there, with what Bournemouth did late in the window, I think West Brom sacking Ismaels, I know we were going to talk about this anyway, West Brom sacking Valerian Ismael today is an interesting one, because they had the look of a team that weren't going to make the top six, whether the way they were playing, from everything you read and hear, the mood at the Hawthorns. I thought their strategy in the summer was very muddled, West Brom's. They seemed to bounce from one idea to the other, didn't they? Chris Wilder was, you know, thankfully he didn't go there, but he was the standout candidate by a country mile from the outside looking in. I know David Wagner was close at one point, and then they went to Ismael. But the thing with Ismael, you know, yes, he was successful at Barnsley last year, but we all saw the way they played. Now that's okay, you know, with all the respect in the world to, you know, when you're going into a team like Barnsley. But suddenly, when you're going into West Brom with a team packed with talent who are expected to go up, to then play that way is and I guess expect everyone to get on board, is very different, isn't it? So their appointment's going to be interesting. I see Steve Bruce is the early favourite, although the early prices sometimes mean very little. Forest look good, don't they? Huddersfield are a strange one, because I keep expecting Huddersfield to fall away, and yet they keep grinding results out. You think Blackburn and QPR look pretty solid, so it looks to me like it's probably two from like four or five.
Craig, I mean, Dom has mentioned there the word expectation. Do you think Wilder prefers the fact that, you know, Middlesbrough are chasing down the top two? Because I always feel, you know, when you're being chased, it's a lot easier to fall away than it is. You know, there's no real expectation on Middlesbrough to get into the top two now, because, like you say, the top two are looking brilliant and what have you. But, you know, if you're in the top two, there's pressure to remain there, and that's not always an easy thing to match.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. The honest answer is I'm not sure, you know, what Wilder's mentality in that regard will be. He talks a lot about expectations and about standards. And of course, you know, when he first arrived at Middlesbrough, we were 14th in the table. And you know, at that point, even making the top six looked some way off. And you know, in the weeks since, in the months since, he's completely turned it around in the manner that he has. And I think now, realistically, when we use that word expectation, I think the expectation now amongst, me and I think most Middlesbrough fans as well, is that Middlesbrough at least make the top six now this season. I do agree with Dom. I think top two is probably a bit of a stretch, but it's, there's no reason why they can't push for it. But I think certainly most will now be expecting that Borough make that top six and get into those playoffs in May. I know when Chris Wilder's spoken about expectation, it's been with regards to that, with regards to kind of making the top six and the fact that expectations continue to rise with the form that Borough have been in. And he's always kind of said, I'd rather it that way. I'm happy that expectation is there because it means we're doing well. If we weren't doing well, that expectation wouldn't be there.
It's certainly going to be an interesting run at the final a few weeks of the season. We mentioned there a few players who's gone out on loan. Hayden Coulson went out and Igapitsu went to Cardiff. What does the future hold for them come the summer? Is it a case that Coulson will come back and hopefully be in the mix, but Igapitsu looks like his future on Teesside's probably done and dusted?
Coulson, it just hasn't worked for him in Ipswich, has it? Paul Cook took him there. Obviously, they were expected to storm that division really after their bold summer, and Cook's gone, it hasn't really worked out. Coulson's been injured, so hopefully a new scene will help him. I did wonder, because he's a good fit, Coulson, for Wilder's system, isn't he? He's a wing back, probably more than a winger or a left back or a number 10, as Neil Warnock played him on a few occasions. But obviously Mark Ball has got the shirt when he's fit. You've got Neil Taylor there now as well. And the reality is that Wilder won't really have had a chance to watch Coulson because he's been injured. So I think it's a chance for him in the Championship at a team that are obviously struggling. He's going to have a fight to stay up there at Posh. But it's a chance to catch the eye from afar, come back in the summer and then reassess again. Going purely off the Woodgate season, when Woodgate was in charge and Warnock replaced him, up until the Warnock appointment, Coulson was Borough's player of the year for me, other than maybe Paddy McNair. So there's definitely something there. I don't think you should write him off by any means. As for Ic Piezu, I think it's pretty clear, barring a major change of heart from Borough, that his future's elsewhere. Obviously, we know that Borough didn't want a loan initially. They wanted a permanent, but the stance softened on deadline day. And I'd seen Steve Morrison saying that Ic Piezu chose Cardiff over a few other clubs. Well, they must have all wanted a loan as well. But I think that's a good move for him. I think it's a good fit. I think it's a good move. And we've certainly seen enough in the first half of the season to prove that Ic Piezu has plenty to offer at this level. So I hope it goes well for him, and then hopefully he gets a move and a move that suits all parties in the summer.
Anything to add there, Craig, or should we move on to one man who didn't get to leave the Riverside this January? Well, go on. I'll let you add anything on there first.
Well, then we'll go. I was just going to say, to add on to what Dom said there on Ic Piezu as well, I mean, of course, Middlesbrough's stance did have to soften on Ic Piezu because they did want to sell him initially, and in the end, as the window winds down and time runs out, they had to soften that stance and allow him to go out on loan. But I think from Borough's point of view, he's contracted, I believe, until 2024. But certainly beyond this season. Similar to the Jed Spence situation, and he went out in the summer because he didn't really fit that manager's style at that time. He's gone away on loan and excelled at Nottingham Forest, and now his valuation will be sky high, and hopefully in the summer he's going to go and earn Middlesbrough a lot of money. And similarly, with the Uchiha Piezu situation, yes, they had to soften the stance, but it makes sense because he goes, plays games for Cardiff, hopefully does well, and that hopefully, means that he has some kind of valuation for himself, because it was clear he wasn't going to play if he stayed at Middlesbrough for the rest of this season. He didn't feature in Wilder's plans, and he won't beyond this season either, because he's as much as I like Uchi, I like his wholehearted, heart on his sleeve style of play, that's not how Chris Wilder wants to play. He wants his strikers to be mobile. He wants them to press from the top. He wants them to play with high intensity and have really good technical ability on the ball. And that's not the type of striker that Uchi is. So ultimately, just a deal that works well for all parties in the end.
I think we've pronounced his name about three or four different ways there in the last 10 minutes. So good luck to
us. We should take Neil Warnock's advice and just call him the big man.
On to one man who was told he could leave but didn't leave, and that was James the Slicky. Obviously, he's on loan at the moment. Wilder said he could go. He didn't end up leaving. So what does the future hold for him?
So Chris Wilder did tell James Lee Slicky he could leave. He's on loan at the club from Wren. And that deal that they did in the summer kind of involved quasi obligations where they could buy him at the end of the season were certain parameters met. That complicated the situation this month because, of course, Saliki's, you know, ultimately come to Teesside, and to be brutally honest, he hasn't impressed. He hasn't had a lot of game time, but when he has been on the pitch, you know, he's not looked up to it, to be brutally honest. And, you know, since Chris Wilder's come in, he's obviously taken a look at him in training, etc. And he's not fancied him either. And he's not played a single minute under Chris Wilder. He was made available this month. Chris Wilder kind of explained that it would need to be a situation where Burrow worked with Wren and also worked with his representative to try and find him an alternative club, because clearly Wren didn't want to just have him back, so the loan couldn't be just terminated. So further complicating that matter was the fact that he is, of course, in Cameroon at the moment, representing his country at the Africa Cup of Nations. So, yeah, there was a lot of work went into that one. I know there was. The player wanted to leave, so his representative was trying his hardest to find Saliki a new club, and ultimately, you know, that didn't happen before the end of the deadline. But of course, as I wrote a piece yesterday, most major European countries, in line with England, their transfer window did close on January 31st. But there are still a couple of countries where, you know, you could realistically think a move could still be in the offing potentially. Turkey, I think, is open until the 8th of February. You know, we know Turkish clubs have the financial means. Britta Sombolonga and Yannick Bolasie both move into Turkey in the summer just gone. And also the MLS would be a potentially interesting destination there. Their transfer window opens on February 10th. So potential there, perhaps, that, you know, maybe an MLS club were able to kind of do some kind of deal, because, you know, ultimately from Wren's point of view, they don't want him back. They don't want to be paying his wages. But they'll also appreciate that Middlesbrough is not going to play either, and Middlesbrough aren't going to kind of, you know, want to sign him permanently in the summer. So it makes sense for them to try and move him elsewhere as well, where they might potentially be able to sell, you know, after a successful loan spell elsewhere. Because, you know, you look at the landscape now at Middlesbrough, Chris Wilder this month, Marcus Tavernier has that position in the team currently, but they've brought in Riley McGree. And they brought in Caleb Boydmans, both who are left-footed central midfielders like Tavernier and like Saliki. You might argue that in terms of quality, in terms of CV, Saliki should be ahead of Boydmans were it to get that far down the pecking order. But Boydmans is ultimately a Borough player. He's contracted long-term and he's a project for the club. So are you going to kind of put your trust and put your development into Boydmans? Or are you going to play Saliki? That would be the dilemma if it ever come to that. And for me, you know, you look to the future and you put your focus on Boydmans. So a tricky situation for Saliki now.
Certainly is. Dom, do you see what they've done in January as laying some of the foundations for the future, regardless of what league they're in next season?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Riley McGree's what, 23? I think there's real excitement as to getting him on a permanent deal. I know Falarin Balogun and Aaron Connolly are both loans, but, you know, Balogun is a player that Chris Wilder has courted for two years, four windows. And, you know, what's to say that if Borough were to go up, or even if they weren't to go up, if Arsenal have liked what they've seen, they don't say, you know, have him for another season and give another season to Balogun, because... yeah, obviously he's in a hurry. All young lads are at that stage when they're talented and they're desperate to get to where they want to be. You know, look at Patrick Bamford, but it took Bamford probably four or five more years than he wanted to, maybe with a few misguided moves along the way. You know, Crystal Palace, sorry, Burnley, that loan move that didn't work out when, you know, in hindsight, he'd probably been better off staying at Borough for another year and, you know, being the best striker in the Championship and playing week in, week out. So there's nothing to say that, you know, you're not going to get another loan deal there. And I think you look through the team as well. You know, Wilder, and look at the team here. And Neil Warnock talked about this a few times, the kind of core for the next 3 or 4 years. You know, Isaiah Jones, Dyke Steele, Bowler, Fry, McNair, Tavernier, McGree, as mentioned, Matt Crooks. You know, Matt Crooks is a little bit older, at what, 28 without checking. But these are all players, certainly all those who I've mentioned there, who look and whose best years are ahead of them. You know, Andras Sparrar, Duncan Watmore, again, they're not as young, but they're by no means coming to the end of their career. So I think Wilder will definitely look and think that the future's bright. And that's without kind of touching on the likes of Josh Coburn or the other under 23 players or the other youngsters who are out on loan and who are knocking at the door. I think when Wilder first came in, you know, he was pretty clear that we've already got a plan for January. We don't want to be waiting until the end of the window. We want to be quick off the mark. Now, with respect, every manager says that, don't they? You know, we've all heard it coming up to every window. But it was clear that Borough did have a plan and that, you know, Wilder, Kieran Scott, Neil Bowser, Steve Gibson, they were all pulling in the same direction. And what they wanted, they got pretty quickly. There was clarity as to who was allowed to go, who they wanted in, what they wanted in. And as I say, obviously the proof's in the pudding. And, you know, confession time, I thought last January was a good window and it didn't work out, you know, it didn't go to plan. I think it has the look of one of the most solid windows, certainly January windows, in a good few years.
Yeah, most certainly. So it's going to be exciting to see, obviously, not just how this season ends, but, you know, the looking ahead to the seasons to come. Craig, we'll go to you next and just briefly talk about the game against Coventry. 1-0 win. You know, we spoke about it last week on Tribe Super. We spoke about what a good outfit Coventry were. Was the scoreline a fair reflection of how the game went? Or was it a bit, you know, should Middlesbrough have done a little bit better?
Yeah, I think Middlesbrough absolutely could have been better on the day. I think if you're a Coventry City supporter, and certainly Mark Robbins, the Coventry City boss, you know, you're leaving the Riverside aggrieved at the fact that you are losing that game 1-0. As you say, we did say Coventry are a good side, and so it proved. They were really impressive, to be fair to them. Brought a good away following with them. And really passed the ball around well, were well drilled, well organised. And as I say, of the two sides, they looked the crisper in possession. They looked that little bit tastier in possession. And certainly, you know, first half, it was relatively even overall, but Coventry just had that little slight edge to their play that Borough just ultimately lacked. Having said that, though, Borough, you know, after Blackburn, we said they needed that kind of reaction. It was a big mentality test for them. And they passed that side of it. They still weren't at the best in terms of, you know, performance and quality-wise, but it was a big mentality test for them coming out of the Blackburn game, and they did pass that. They were clearly more up for the game. The intensity of the play they were trying to do was higher than that Blackburn game. And as we alluded to earlier when we were talking about the January recruitment, you know, one change from Chris Wilder, ultimately he made two at the time with Pierre also coming on, but it was the one change, swapping Connolly for Balogun, that it made the difference, because Balogun came on instantly, offered something on that left-hand side. We highlighted that on the last podcast as well. Balogun instantly linked with Neil Taylor, and Marcus Tavernier put the ball in the middle, and Sparrar was on hand, and you know, Borough win that game 1-0. As I say, in terms of the mentality test, Coventry then have, what was it, over 20 minutes, I think, to go at Borough and look for the equaliser. Over 30 minutes, actually, wasn't it? It was 50 odd minutes, the goal. And you know, so they're naturally then pushing for the equaliser and putting everything in, and Borough, you know, then it becomes one of the games. And we've seen a couple of these under Wilder. They haven't all been, you know, amazing, brilliant performances, easy on the eye. Sometimes you have to grind it out, and Burrow, you know, did grind it out on Saturday and have done on a couple of occasions. And, you know, it's a good trait, I think, that some weeks you can be at your brilliant best and, you know, playing Nottingham Forest off the park, for example. Other weeks you might not be at your best, but you've got that kind of will and determination to grind out a result.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Wilder picked the same team that lost out against Blackburn, didn't he, Dom? I mean, Craig's mentioned there the test of character, but that, you know, that shows faith from Wilder. I know he made a couple of changes during the game, but it was good to see the players kind of respond in that manner, because it was really, you know, Wilder saying, no, you've let me down last week, so go out today and prove me, you know, that it was like a blip in the road.
Yeah, that's it. I think he's had nothing but good things to say about the players as characters and as players, has he so far. So I think there was an element of, right, now let's see what you're made of type thing. It was the first time, I know he gave him a bit of a dressing down after the second half at Preston when he didn't like the attitude, but it was the first time he'd really laid into them, wasn't it? I'd have probably kind of expected one or two changes, but I wasn't too surprised at all when I saw his selection. It'll be interesting to see what he does at Old Trafford, won't it? Because, you know, I know obviously in cup games, it's a chance to maybe tinker slightly, but it's one of those ties that absolutely nobody wants to miss out on. You've been in with Matt Crooks this morning, Craig, and obviously Crooks plays week in, week out, but how do you tell Crooks he's not playing at Old Trafford on a Friday night in front of 9,000 fans? So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go, you know, same again at Old Trafford on Friday night. With the exception being, and I don't want to feel as though we're kind of lumping in on Conley here, because it's more Balogun than Conley. That's the one that comes to mind, isn't it? That's the kind of obvious one. Or what more, as we talked about last week. But I think the rest probably picks itself, especially, you know, McGree was always unlikely to play at Old Trafford, wasn't he? Might have been on the bench, but given, you know, he was expected back, was it Thursday at the very earliest? But obviously his positive COVID test came back yesterday, so now we know he's out. I haven't seen anything today, Craig. I don't know whether you have, but there's nothing clear yet as to when he will be back for certain. Football Australia just said that they'll kind of get him back as soon as possible. So again, other than any injuries or any kind of setbacks we don't know about, it's that one spot up front. And other than that, I think it picks itself.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a really interesting team sheet. And like you say, everyone will be up for that game. And as Dom mentioned there, Craig, you spoke to Matt Crooks this morning. You know, what is the feeling like within the camp about this massive cup tie against Manchester United?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly a bit of excitement from Matt Crooks, definitely, because he revealed in that he's actually a big Manchester United fan. He went to games as a kid, and you know, there's been a couple of seats at Old Trafford in his family for about 40 years now, he said. So, you know, a special one for him to go and play at Manchester United. He was also on their books from an 8-year-old until he was 14. He was released by the club at 14, went to Huddersfield Town and came through the academy ranks there in the end. But, you know, so particularly for him, a very exciting prospect. And as Dom says, you know, without that aspect of it, how do you tell Matt Crooks, who's been in the team week in, week out, that he isn't going to play at Old Trafford? But then add that in as well. You know, he's you'd feel very sorry for him if he wasn't in the starting lineup on Friday evening. But yeah, it's really interesting to speak with Matt Crooks. He is such a great talker, and you know, he's got that. I've seen a lot of people make the comparison, and I think it is really good, the comparison to George Friend with Matt Crooks, because he does just have that character and that personality where you just feel like he gets it, and you know, he helps kind of create that bond between club, players and the fan base as well. That connection is always really important, I feel, and Matt Crooks is always important to that. But yeah, in terms of the wider, you know, how are the squad looking ahead to this, you know, excitement I'm sure among all of them, but also I think, you know, and again, I think most people probably know I'm a Manchester United supporter myself, and I think from Borough's perspective, they have nothing to fear going into this game. And Matt Crooks, you know, alluded to that himself. Manchester United are not the force they once were. This is not the Manchester United of the Sir Alex Ferguson days. They have a lot of vulnerabilities now. And, you know, Middlesbrough, if they can get back to the kind of performances that we saw against Bournemouth and against Nottingham Forest, this Middlesbrough side can go out and give something in this game, because, you know, they're naturally going to be up for it. Friday night, 9,500 Borough fans there, under the lights, FA Cup, big game, TV. You know, if you're not fired up for that one, when are you going to be fired up for a game? So I think absolutely, you know, they've got a lot to play for here. And that was reflected by Matt Crooks. He absolutely feels that, you know, Borough can go to Old Trafford and get something.
And Wilder Dom will put that fire right in the bellies of the players as well. You know, even if it is a team that he's picked in recent weeks with maybe just one or two changes, you know, he'll make sure that they go there. He'll point out the 9,500 fans in the stand and say, look, they've come all the way down here Friday night. You know, money's a bit tight and all that. Let's go and put a good show on for them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the message will be simple in that, you know, this is where you want to be. This is the type of stage you want to be playing on. You know, this is where we want to be every week. Wilder's been there, hasn't he? And he absolutely wants to be back there. He doesn't want to be a championship manager. But I think beyond that, as Craig says there, there will be a message of, you know, you can, we're not here to make up the numbers type thing. You know, we can win this. We can scare them. As Craig, obviously Man United are the favourites, but that fear factor has gone. And everyone I've spoken to kind of has, you know, talked about the game, how much you're looking forward to it. And then there's been that, you know, I fancy us to go there and get something. I was listening to Five Live for Football Daily podcast this morning, and they had Warnock on. And he was saying, you know, he fancied Borough to go there. He repeated his, I wouldn't swap Dyke, Steele, Fry and McNair for any of the Man United back three line. But you know, I'm not saying Borough will win, but I certainly fancy them to go there and make it difficult for United. I think it might be one goal either way.
No, 100%. They can definitely give them a game, and Manchester United have been so inconsistent of late that, like you say, the Borough should definitely go there without any fear at all. Of course, Craig will be down there at Old Trafford covering that game for Gazette Live.
We're hoping to be down there, hopefully. Yeah.
Both of you, are you going as well, Dom?
Yeah, we're hoping so.
I'm hoping to be allowed out. Yeah, of this back room. So fingers crossed I'll be there.
Look at that, bringing the big guns out for the big game, eh?
Big game, big guns.
Oh, that'll be lovely to see. We'll need a selfie and we'll post it in under the next week's episode of Tripe Supper to have proof that Dom was allowed out of his back room.
Not since Rotherham. Was it Rotherham in pre-season when we were both there? So it's only the big ones that we both go to. Rather than pre-season friendly, Borough Man United FA Cup fourth round.
Come on, then we'll finish with score predictions. Dom, how's it going to end?
I think I'm not going to give a prediction. I'm going to say it'll go all the way. It'll go through. I think it'll be level at 90. Then a goal either way. I think a draw at 90 minutes.
I mean, that is sitting on the fence. If there was a better moment to describe sitting on the fence, that would most certainly be it. Craig,
but
don't
it's
do
still
the same.
Bold, really, to say Borough are going to go and draw Man United.
Craig?
Yeah, well I'll take that. We'll have some Joe Lumley penalty shootout heroics.
Who'd be Borough's five, do you reckon, Craig?
Who? Sorry, what was
who'd be Borough's five in a shootout?
It goes on who plays it, because I wouldn't be surprised if he does switch it up top. But obviously, Sparrow has taken a couple of penalties this
McNair,
season.
McNair would take one, wouldn't he?
I could see Crooks having the mentality to take one, stepping up and doing it. Tav, probably technical ability. Johnny Howson, responsible head on his shoulders. I think Paddy McNair's taken a couple in his time.
Yeah, McNair would definitely take one,
yeah. And then I think you're looking at whichever is the other striker on the pitch, Balogun, Connolly, Watmore. one of them.
I know it's very simple. I've always said this, though. You always want your centre forwards to be stepping up and taking a penalty, don't you, in a shootout? But they're there to score goals. You don't get a better chance than stepping up in a penalty to take a penalty.
It's an interesting one. I think of Duncan Watmore taking a penalty, and it doesn't fill me with a lot of confidence, that one. He's always, I mean, he scores some cracking goals, but a lot of the time, it sounds stupid, it looks kind of unnatural the way he strikes the ball.
What more is to score the winning penalty on Friday night, then? That's my prediction.
No, we're not going to need penalties. I'm going to go and say Middlesbrough to win 2-1. I've got a bit of faith. My United have been all over the shop recently, so Boa to beat Man United, I think, definitely.
Yeah, I'll go 1-0. Deal Fry to return back to Teesside with Cristiano Ronaldo tucked firmly in that pocket.
Well, thank you guys for tuning in to Tribe Supper. Please remember to like and follow the podcast, which is totally free to do. Just means with every episode we upload, you'll get a notification saying it's ready to be listened to or downloaded to your device. Head over to Gazette Live to follow all the latest Middlesbrough FC news. Once again, thank you very much for tuning in.